This is The Think Tank, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week with Dr. Mike O'Neill and hosted by Mike Russell. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, we are here. The legislature is in session. No one is safe. We are here to review what is happening in the state of Arizona with radio star John Gilliland and Arizona Republic columnist Lori Roberts. Okay, outrage of outrage. What's the most crazy thing going on in the legislature right now in terms of proposed legislation?
Well, the collective crazy is a series of bills that seek to declare our sovereignty. I guess, basically, I don't know why we don't just go ahead and secede. Trying to say, basically, to the federal government, you're not the boss of us. You're not the boss of us when it comes to the Affordable Care Act, and we're not going to enforce it. You're not the boss of us when it comes to gun laws, and we're not going to enforce them. You're not the boss of us on a variety of topics.
You know, that's interesting. My 9-year-old daughter used that exact phraseology. You're not the boss of me.
There you go.
But what does that do? So let's say these start to pass, and you mentioned, Lori, why don't we just secede? Why don't we just get out of the country if that's the case? What does that do if it does pass? How does that paint Ducey into a corner if he is going to, obviously he has hopes beyond the governor of Arizona? What does that do to him politically?
Well, we don't know what he would do if those bills make it up to him. I think what it does is if they do make it up to him and he does decide to sign them, it lands us right in federal court with a series of lawsuits. But he's sort of an unknown quantity at this point. You know, even when you watch him, Ducey and the Douglas thing, what he said on the campaign trail seems to be a little different from his approach to governing thus far.
Well, we'll hold the Diane Douglas thing for segment two, because I think that whole kerfuffle warrants a whole segment. But John, what's your number one outrage?
Well, it's not a crazy bill, but it's probably the most far-reaching and most outrageous from a policy standpoint, and that is this whole repeal of Common Core. I mean, Diane Douglas ran on the repeal. Ducey's on record as being opposed to Common Core, but it is the most far-reaching of the bills out there right now as far as common families are concerned. And the testimony by people at the hearing saying if Albert Einstein wrote the math standards, if William Shakespeare wrote the English standards, they would still oppose Common Core because it's not Arizona. What does that say about us as a state?
We don't like, or there are elements that don't like anything that says federal government.
Well, let's be honest, this federal government, that's what they're going after. It's the Obama administration is what they have a problem with. And they feel that Common Core is Obama's personal takeover of the healthcare. I mean, excuse me, my Freudian slip is showing. The personal is a takeover of our education system. And if you have an R beside your name, you are supposed to be fundamentally opposed to that.
Yes, except that Common Core really wasn't developed by the Obama administration. Right. But it doesn't seem to matter.
If you ask 10 people, even with ours beside their name, even the people that are drafting this legislation, define Common Core, you're going to get at least 8 different answers.
You know, and the sad thing is that this is such a sideshow. You would think that we had no issues in this state. Mm-hmm. Certainly you would think that we had no issues in public education if this is the best that we can do. And yet we have huge issues.
Well, that gigantic amount of money that the state still owes the schools because of the voter-approved funding bills. Where are we going to get that money from in a cash-strapped state with a $1 billion deficit already?
It's not in the governor's budget.
It is not. It's supposed to be being arbitrated now by the Court of Appeals to try to reach some sort of settlement. I really don't know what would prompt the schools to want to settle in that they have won at every level of court. But I think the real battle is over the back payments, the billion or so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard that the schools have said that they will completely forego all of the back payments. We just want to be paid prospectively in the future. That which was promised.
Well, yes, but the issue is over how you figure the formula and how much is due. The legislature believes that far less is due to them than obviously the schools does. So it's another thing to fight about.
I mean, the best figure I've seen, I think it's $300 million in current revenue each year.
Right, but the legislature contends that should be really $85 million.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. that's a Grand Canyon sized chasm that just is not going to get bridged anytime soon.
That's why they're in settlement talks.
But it sounds like the courts probably come down again and say no. It's my guess is closer to the $300 million figure, and they continue to appeal it. They continue to expend legal costs, but in so doing, they delay the implementation. And eventually they have to come up with most of that.
And meanwhile, they're doing more to help charter schools. There's more student tuition, more tax credits toward private school tuition, what I call vouchers, more cuts to public education, more empowerment scholarship accounts to try to get kids to lure them out of public schools and into private schools at the taxpayer on the taxpayer's dime. It's just unfathomable to me why our legislature hates public education so much.
Can we return for just a second to Common Core and tell us where did these Common Core standards actually come from?
I believe that they were put together by a coalition of all of the states. Their state superintendents or whatever the equivalent is in the different states at the behest of the Governors Association.
Did Arizona's superintendent take part in that?
I believe so.
So in fact, Common Core standards are in some way Arizona standards as well anyway.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the point is that they haven't even been really, truly, fully implemented. I don't know why we, after spending all this money to get them implemented, why don't we at least give them a chance to succeed or fail on their own?
Because what are we doing? If we're number 47, I believe, in the country, if you always do what you always do, done, you always get what you always got. So if we try something different, why is that so radical? Why is that so crazy? Try it. Give it some time. Maybe we'll do better. If we don't, what are we going to do? Go down to 48? There's not much floor left to go down to.
When you get into the details, and I've dug in and read some of these, essentially they say things like you'll be able to read material and actually comprehend it and evaluate what you read. You will be able to have basic numeracy and perform specific computations.
My kids are in it.
The interesting thing in the last gubernatorial election, of course, was that even though Governor Ducey said that he was against it, both he and his opponents send their kids to schools that employ the Common Core standards themselves.
That's interesting. Yeah. And I think that you will see Ducey soften on this because I think the business community is probably all over him saying, you know, just let it go.
Right. Try something different. That's just what I'm preaching here is try something different. Different just because you think it came from a Muslim Kenyan, that guy's trying to take over our country. He's the president right now. Even so, even if it were Barack Hussein Obama, president of the United States that put it before us, guess what? He's the boss, applesauce. We elected him twice. So deal with it for now. Let's see what happens. But I want to stick with Diane Douglas when we come back, because a lot of a big, big dust up this week between her and your governor. That's next right here on The Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, the greatest political theater of this past week is, I think, without a doubt, the dispute between the recently Republican governor elected and the recently elected Republican superintendent of public instruction, Diane Douglas. John, give us a backstory in case somebody's been living in a cave for the last week. What happened?
Well, you've got Diane Douglas elected to the superintendent's position amid cries that she isn't qualified, she's not ready for prime time, she can't handle the office. She won't be able to handle the office. And then the first thing she does when she gets into office is she has a gigantic dust up with the governor over these two people that are on that work for the school board and whether or not, as they work for the school board, she has the authority to fire them or not.
And she's a member of the school board. She's the only non as virtue of being superintendent of public instruction, she's on the board. The rest of the board is appointed by the governor.
Right. And the issue is that there is language that says that these people will work at her direction. So can she direct them to not work there anymore? And the governor says, no, she can't. And she's decided that discretion is the better part of valor. And from what I understand, she's kind of backing off that position.
I don't know if she's backing off of it. She initially backed off of it. She had a what she called a press conference, but was really just to stand up and read a statement because she really didn't take any tough questions at all, where she appeared to be conciliatory. And then she went to a meeting that afternoon and dumped away the media microphones and became.
She broke some of those things. Dang it. There were a lot of reporters that were upset about that. She just got rid of those things in short order.
I thought it was kind of funny myself. But, you know, she has gone on now to hire her own attorney, which I'm assuming is at our expense.
Of course. To
reiterate that she has the authority here, and she's put out this absurd memo about what these people can and cannot do. For example, they report to her, she says. They can't talk business with anyone else in the office. Huh? Free speech. Hello. You know, it's pretty crazy. But the interesting thing to me is why Doug Ducey decided to interject himself into what was a dispute between the State Board of Education and the state superintendent.
Saying he didn't have to do it. He could have let the board handle it themselves. Hmm?
I would think so.
But he did it. Did he do it right?
Well, he's a businessman. And as a businessman, I think he sees himself more as the CEO of the state than as the elected leader of the state.
I got a problem here. I'm going to solve it.
Basically, that's exactly what it is. He thought he could step in. He did step in. And so now he's in it.
I think the most once you get past this personnel issue, which has some legal ambiguity, but most of the stuff I've seen is that, you know, that she doesn't have that authority. There was prior case law on this. But the most interesting, I think, comment on the whole thing was the swipe she took at the governor about how, well, he's just representing these people who are making money on charter schools. And charter school is a sort of a Republican icon. So she's taking a swipe at charter schools. And she says, because all this money is getting sucked out to charter schools that you're underfunding public schools. That's that statement would not be astounding if it came from a Democrat, but from a Republican, that is a kind of a mind-blowing statement.
Well, and there is also some truth in what she had to say. While everybody is hitting on Diane Douglas, and certainly she is a bit of a zealot, more than a bit of a zealot, and she certainly is tone deaf when it comes to her leadership style. Some of the things she said in that memo have merit. There are questions about the people he has surrounded himself in the education community. It seems to be very heavy on charter schools, not so much on traditional public schools. There are questions about his budget. His budget coming up actually cuts schools by $13.5 million. So she did raise some issues in her rant.
Though interesting, if you think back to his campaign, while he said education was going to be his number one priority, I think you read between the lines, and what we got in his budget is, I think, what most of us expected, that when he said that the number one thing was going to be no new taxes, you know, and even the fanciful notion of eliminating the state income tax, while that was never going to happen, it does indicate where his priorities are. I mean, did any of us expect him to propose a substantial budget increase for education?
No, but I didn't expect a decrease either. However, I will say that I agree with him on one thing. Too much is being spent outside the classroom.
Thank you. Yes.
Now, teachers will say, well, we had to because you've cut us over the years and there's nothing left to cut. You know, fixed costs are fixed costs. Transportation is what it costs. Heating bills are what they cost. So you can't cut that. The only place you can cut is the classroom. And there is some degree of merit to that. Mm-hmm. But for the fact that the percentage of class money going to the classroom has been declining since 2004, which is well before the Great Recession. So I think there is a legitimate issue here. I'd like to see him pursue unification.
Yeah, but if you're going to say we got to cut administration, you got to provide a mechanism
for doing it. From a parent standpoint, yesterday I'm a West Side guy. I'm driving right past the brand new, beautiful, beautiful administration offices for the Avondale Unified Elementary School District. These things are gorgeous. They would make a lot of companies go, I want to work there. That's the place. And then you tell me, well, on day one, I need to bring both John and Jillian's classroom about $100 in supplies each. That's infuriating. And
yes.
Then they tell us that there's no money left. The money's there. It's going to the wrong places.
Well,
as a parent.
I mean, I'm not a business person, so I don't know, but it seems to me that if you combine some things and make them bigger, you can spread your fixed costs over a greater
You only need one superintendent. Then, the number of assistant superintendents could probably be reduced.
Amen.
In Maricopa County, we have 56 school districts. Of those, about 42, I think, are not unified. In Phoenix Union High School District, you have one high school district, you have 13 elementary school feeder districts. It's insane.
But that kind of goes to the whole separatist argument here with federalism and whatnot. I mean, it goes down the line. You have such a disjointed education system ministerially because people want to have that kind of localized control.
That's not why we have it. We have it because we've had it for 100 years, and it was that way when the state of Arizona became a state. It is crazy to me that you have a Phoenix Elementary School District that runs up to Osborne. And then you have an Osborne school district that runs between Osborne and Bethany Home.
Osborne, I think, used to be the end of the city limits.
Well, that's exactly. You know,
that was
exactly
the Phoenix City school district.
But I think if we all agree that we need to figure out, I think we can all agree we want to get more money into the classroom. We want to pay our teachers better. We want to have smaller class sizes. One of the things that should be considered is, would unification of some of these districts help do that?
But how can you get elected on that saying I'm going to cut this many jobs?
You can't.
Exactly. That's where we're running into this big problem, is it comes down to, can I get reelected because I'm going to cut jobs?
So what's most important, your reelection or fixing this problem that you asked to be elected to fix?
Ask a parent? I'm saying that that's more important. The latter, obviously.
Yeah.
But obviously as a politician, they're going to give you a different answer.
Right. The school officials don't like this plan. In fact, when it came up in, I think, 2008 or 2009, and it was voted on in some of the states, it went down in most areas of the states, and those places where it passed, the school boards actually sued us to set them aside. And
local control is one of those magic words, like states' rights. It sounds good until you start thinking of what the implications of it really are.
Well, the implication is that you're going to have less and less money in your classroom to help your kid.
And that's it. And we see it as parents taking bags of stuff to every single classroom and seeing these nice new buildings getting developed. It's very frustrating, and somebody has to get involved here. The uneasy alliance between the economic conservatives and social conservatives right here in the state of Arizona. We're going to hit that next on The Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Well, Mike posed the question as alliance between economic and social conservatives. I think what it really boils down to is, where is Doug Ducey's heart? We have a governor who was elected because he had kind of a big tent. He had the social conservatives like the Center for Arizona Politics. He had Arizona Policy. He had economic conservatives and sort of mainstream guys like John Kyle, Fife Symington. They're all on board. There's folks in his camp whose focus in life is cutting government spending. There are other folks who are more concerned about abortion, immigration, and a host of social issues. When push comes to shove, what hint do we have over which group is going to be really key to where does Doug Ducey come from?
Well, I think the Ducey, the double D, what I call the double D, I guess it would be the quadruple D dust up between Ducey and Douglas gave a hint that I think that his true heart is going to be with the more pragmatic Chamber of Commerce types than with the social conservatives, because the social conservatives are only going to get him so far. I think that he probably understands he wants to bring business to this state. He's a businessman. He knows that marketing is key, and you can't market based on some of the crazy stuff that the social conservatives would like to do with the legislature.
Some of that crazy stuff has crucified us.
Hold on, wait. He ran on that, though. He didn't run on a social conservative platform. He ran on an economic conservative platform. He ran on a business platform. That's what he ran on. So if you need a hint, I think there it is.
Well, I don't know that I can entirely agree with that. He ran on immigration. Also, he ran on anti-Common Core. He ran on pretty much everything.
Anti-federal government.
Yeah.
You know.
Anti-anything with a D. That's what
he got. Yeah, but Ducey's a businessman. He comes from business. He's known for business. His heart is where the money is, not where the social issues are. He's got an innate sympathy for economic interests, especially those, I think, that are pressing for immigration reform, because he wants to expand the economy. And the fastest way to expand the economy is to expand the workforce, and the fastest way to expand the workforce is to allow those people who can't legally be in the workforce to be in the workforce.
You know, I think maybe one of the key indicators of that was look at the way he dealt with the Medicaid expansion. He ran against it, but he didn't make it sort of the linchpin of his entire campaign. And once elected, he said, well, you know, it's already in. We're not going to
propose. He's going to let it play out.
We're not going to talk about it, but we're not going to change it.
Exactly.
It's in.
But again,
it's not my deal.
Financially, he's got to understand, and I'm sure that he does, that would, you think we have budget problems now.
It's $1 billion.
Repeal that and see where
we're worried about 75 versus 300 million in the education budget. That's a billion.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's going to be pragmatic.
So far. Now the question is, does he keep Kathy Herod in the tent?
Yeah, she's got nowhere else to go. Mm-hmm. Where else would she go? It's the same conundrum that Democrats have experienced for a long time. You may not agree with the leadership because they're not as far to your side of the spectrum as you'd like them to be, but you've got no alternative.
You know, this is exactly the game plan that Ronald Reagan used in 1980. He had both of these groups in his tent. And he got in office, and he catered to the economic side.
Triangulation.
To the point where, by the end of his second term, the social conservatives were kind of ticked off. They say, we supported you, and we didn't get much of anything. And then they really tried to put the screws to George W. Bush, H.W. Bush, you need to promise us more.
You'll notice, too, this year that you're not seeing a lot of the crazy bills at the legislature. We haven't seen anything following up on last year's bills trying to legalize religious discrimination.
Do you think that's dead, or do you think it's going to come back?
I think it simmers. It hasn't come back. Nothing's ever dead, of course, until the legislature goes home. Mm-hmm. And we got a few months yet before that will happen. But we have not yet seen a bill. And I have to wonder if he's just kind of damping her down, saying later. We haven't seen all the crazy abortion bills. Mm-hmm. We really haven't seen the crazy stuff, which is probably good for the state, not so good for me, but really good for the state.
Well, those bills, the bill about the religious freedom bill specifically,
right,
was a solution looking for a problem. I don't think it's gone. I don't think it's gone by any stretch. I think it's just lying in the weeds waiting for that one incident, that one piece that they can cling on to and bring it back.
I want to ask you both about that. If you have any insight, when that went through the legislature in the first place, it was put out there to the public as a religious freedom bill. Do you think the legislature got it, that it really was going to be seen? Did they not get the way this was going to be seen in the rest of the world?
I think they were caught completely unaware. First of all, it's because none of them read bills. And I shouldn't say none of them. Most of them don't read bills. Some of them came back afterwards and said, I didn't know what this did. I'm out of here.
I just voted for it.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't think they thought it through.
I mean, they clearly had deniability. John?
Well, yeah. State lawmakers can be so provincial sometimes and not really understand the wider world beyond the borders of Arizona. I think that's really what happened here. They didn't think it was going to generate the firestorm it did.
We clearly didn't think it was going to generate the firestorm, but I wonder if they got that it was essentially legalizing a form of discrimination.
I don't think they thought it through to that level.
Mm-hmm. But they didn't see it that way. Not at all. They didn't see it as legalizing discrimination. Not at all.
But we got to see how our then governor handled it. Remember, she was taking her time and she wanted to decide and read it and really evaluate these types of things. Does Doug Ducey do the same? If it comes back up, now thinking about, like you mentioned, that he's a businessman, so he knows from the business side, wants to bring business to Arizona, and that was a business side, that was a toxic bill. So he sees it. Does he think it through? Does he take his time, or does he take a strong stand and say, no way, not here?
Go ahead.
He's going to say, we've fought this battle already. It's done.
It's never going to come up. This is how the Ducey administration is going to work, and it's smart. He's going to make sure that bill never gets to his desk.
Good. All right.
Because that's the way you kill stuff. That's the exercise of real power, is to make sure that it never gets on the agenda.
I like it. And here's the deal. We're looking at a governor right now who's been in office for, what, 7 weeks? I mean, we really know nothing yet. And as it unfolds, we only know what he ran on in his campaign, and we all know what campaign promises.
Well, wait a minute. We got that wonderful penetrating civics quiz that the kids have to pass now.
That's right. We did
fourth
get that.
Grade test that we're going to
we
require high school
seniors
to
who's
going
to go against Schoolhouse Rock in schools? You know, I mean, come on.
Bring back Schoolhouse Rock.
I'm just a bill. I'm only a bill.
So. Conjunction Junction was the place to be.
Right. That's your version of the way legislation happens.
Until you get there and you see it.
Yeah, that's the grade still version, which walks through the formality. There's no discussion of, for example, strike-all amendments.
Indeed, what? Those are fun.
You want to tell us what a strike-all amendment is?
Well, the strike-all amendment is a way to sort of slide stuff in after the deadline for introducing new legislation. They kill everything past the enactment clause of the bill, and they write in what they like.
Or to put it another way, you can have a bill to rename a state park, and it goes through committee hearings and everything else, and it's on the verge of being passed. And then you take the piece of paper it's written on, eliminate every piece of verbiage in there, insert something completely different that has nothing to do with that, and you don't have to go through committees. It just goes up for final vote.
That's true, but it does have to be marginally germane. So if it's a bill on state parks, maybe you could then outlaw the EPA, because you could say it's all about the environment. But, that's a common thing, and it's been around for time immemorial. The legislature has its rules, but the only rule you really need to understand is at the end of the session, they suspend all the rules.
Yeah, the internal term, they have legislative staffers whose job is to manage what they call vehicles. And a vehicle is a piece of legislation that is sufficiently germane and of course, by and large, they get to determine what's germane. So.
Right. Well, they're already using them a bit. I wrote a week ago about Senator Kelly Ward's bill to outlaw all federal gun laws. And I noticed this week there was a striker on that bill. And now it only outlaws any new federal gun laws. In other words, it's
any Obama gun laws.
Yeah, anything that he might go after. Not that he's going to. I mean, it's a Republican-controlled Congress. Why are you bothering?
These laws just seem destined. It's Lawyers Relief Act.
No, it's the reelection, Get Me Reelected Act.
Let's circle back to that, actually. We started the show when we were talking about some crazy pieces of legislation. There are a few that we didn't get to that we're going to touch on next right here in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we're talking, recycling back to the issue of some of the new things that are up in the legislature that some of us see as outrageous. Lori Roberts, you've written payday loans back on the agenda.
Well, it seems to be. I'm calling it payday loans 2.0 because it's technically not a payday loan, because we all know, of course, that 7 years ago voters outlawed payday loans in this state. But, of course, the payday loan industry is back with something new called a flex loan. Basically, it would be a way for people who have bad credit, they can't get a loan from the bank. If they need a loan of anywhere from $500 to $3,000, they could go to a payday loan center. Or, I'm sorry, we can't call it a payday loan center.
Come on
now. A flex loan center and get a loan. The 36% interest cap would remain, but then come along the customary fees, which would drive this thing into payday loan territory.
Well, I Googled this the other day in preparation here, and I just Googled Arizona payday loan, and I came up and I went to the first item I found, and basically it says payday loan companies are legal in Arizona, blah, blah, blah. And it goes on to tell you here you can get a $500 loan, and here's 14 days cost is $17.65. I did some quick arithmetic. That's a 500% interest rate. In other words, on $100, you're going to pay $500 in interest over the course of a year. And I haven't even completely accounted for compounding in that figure.
Yeah, and isn't it interesting that the Republicans seem to think that this is okay? Of course, what caught my eye is that the consumer finance companies that do the payday loans or previously did them are all for this. What caught my eye is, though, the Arizona Free Enterprise Club also signed on in support of the bill. If you will remember, that is one of the premier dark money groups that we saw in the state last fall. Just leads me to wonder, of course, there's no way to know because it's dark money, but who was given all that dark money to the Arizona Free Enterprise Club to pass on to legislators?
And why would we've got a state that's hundreds of million dollars in deficit, and why all of a sudden legalizing a 500% interest rate loan is a priority for the state of Arizona?
Interestingly, Debbie McCune, the bill was originally assigned to House Banking and whatever the rest of the name is, and she had the votes there to kill it, so they quickly moved it, the House Speaker quickly moved it out of that committee and put it into House Commerce, where it passed on a party line vote.
Well, this is the power of leadership. They basically can assign things to friendly committees, or they can assign them to where they will never see the light of day.
Or reassign them once they find out it will never see the light of day.
Are we that different with this, with the payday loans, flex loans? Are we that different from other states in the country? Are we soft on this? Are we trying to, in some way, tackle it? Do other states just run roughshod?
Well, we did tackle it, and that's the point. Many states allow this sort of thing. According to the industry, 38 states allow these sorts of loans. The question is, do we want to do that? Mm-hmm. Do we want to saddle people with the sort of debt that you take out a $3,000 loan, you pay it off through the course of a year, and at the end of the year, you still owe almost all of the principal still? Some people would say that people who would take these loans can't otherwise get a loan, and that this is better than nothing. I wonder if it just puts them that much further into poverty.
It seems to me that you're setting up people for a lifetime of indebtedness.
Yeah, they are. That's their gig. I mean, rent to own, the whole industry itself is set up to keep people in a cycle of debt. Absolutely it is. But my question is, I don't like them. In any way do I like them at all? But is it government's job, is what I want to know. Is it government's job to stop me, even if all of the details of the contract were on an etch-a-sketch? They were so easy for me to understand, and I still move
forward.
And
they're forward. Not. Oh, and they're
not. No, if they were, is it the government's job to stop it, to protect me from me?
Well, we do it all the time. We have cosmetology license. People who cut my hair have to go to school for hundreds of hours to figure out how to cut my hair.
Of course, the real purpose of that is not to protect you. The real purpose of that is to restrict their competition so that nobody else can quickly get into that business.
But it doesn't say that they can't charge you too much money for it.
We have organizations who protect us from bad contractors. We have all sorts of those sorts of things. And I think that is a function of government. They make those contracts so difficult. You would like to think that there is some
Agreeing with that. Yeah. I agree with that. It's a shady business of shady businesses. Right. I get it.
Yes. But interestingly, you know, the legislature, it doesn't seem to me that there is any compelling reason that Republicans in the legislature would be showing all this great compassion for all these poor people who can't get $500 loans to fix their cars. Their real motivation is to help whoever these people are who are running these organizations to make a lot of money.
But why doesn't the government get involved and loan it out at 5%?
But it does. They do. They're called student loans. But it does beg the question, though, that, I mean, there are other options for people who have bad credit to get high interest loans that are still available in Arizona, like title loans. Title loans, much higher than the 35% rate. And it's still a cycle of indebtedness, if you want to call it that.
Point two, I think poor people do not always make great decisions. But it comes, I think, to
but
the philosophical
right decisions.
Well,
it is their right.
There's a philosophical point which you raise. Yes, what do we think is the function of government? Let me throw out a proposition to you. This phrase is out there a lot. Big government. I want to suggest that I think where we really have big government is at the state and local, not at the federal level. The amount of regulation of cosmetology and you name every regulate, the purpose of which is primarily to protect those industries, that's where we, put an addition on your house. What do you go through? Where does government really intrude on your actual personal life? Almost none of that is a federal government.
Well, they intrude on April 15th every year, I can tell you that.
Amen, yeah. Sister. Yeah. Amen.
But what we don't realize is a lot of that money flows back to this. We think we're paying it to the federal government, but almost half the state of Arizona budget is flow through from the Fed. So a lot of that money we pay to the federal government is really supporting the state of Arizona.
And this is supposed to make me feel
those
better?
That are paying
no, it
the
just
taxes.
Says just figure out where it's going. You're paying some of that money that you think you're paying to the feds, a big chunk of it is really going to the state of Arizona.
And if we knew that all of those dollars were being spent in a wise way, then we'd have no problem with it. But
we
know better than that.
And back to the April 15th thing, people are really seeing the intrusion of the federal government as far as that goes with these penalties that people are paying because they were unable to get insured.
Yes.
And now they're paying. We're hearing stories of people facing $1,000 tax bills because two or three or four people in their household weren't insured. It's it's really putting the pinch on a lot of people.
And they're also running into the estimates that people were dealing with, too, when they first signed up for insurance, that they had to estimate their income. And for a lot of people, especially with hourly jobs, estimating is daunting to a lot of those people. Yeah. And now they have to make up the difference.
But for a system to be fair, it has to be based on that, because the actual subsidy is a function of how much you actually earn, not how much you say you're going to earn. Otherwise, you could fudge the system.
But that wasn't, let's say that wasn't openly discussed during the debate.
And it cuts both ways. If you estimate your income low, you end up paying more. If you estimate your income high, you get a bigger refund.
And, of course, all that money that they're paying in penalties now will, of course, come back to Arizona under the Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. See, it's all circular.
Unless we
outlaw it, because Fair we're enough. Sovereign state.
Yeah, I thought we dealt with that 150
well,
years
what
ago.
What is this?
Didn't we have a civil war over that point?
Hold
we
were on, on the hold wrong on. Side. Here yeah. was here. This was on my notes. I want to get to it because I didn't see it. It slipped past me. Apparently, the speed limit 10-mile-an-hour freebie. What is this? Because it excites me.
Well, we've had it
freebie.
For a while.
Let's go.
When,
I like this.
When the feds passed the 55-mile-per-hour speed limit, Arizona decided we were going to implement a 10-mile-per-hour buffer over the speed limit and call it the wasting of a finite resource.
And there was a $5 fine for it.
Yes. Well, inflation, now it's,
10.
Now, yeah. And it's going to be on any roadway except those that pass through residential areas, school zones, and work zones with any speed limit. So if it's 25, you can go 35. If it's 75, you can go 85.
Oh, I love this bill.
Well, I like this bill because right outside of my house is a street that the speed limit is 30 miles an hour, and I've never seen anybody go 30, including me,
until you get
the old photo radar people out there. And then you all slow down to 25.
Everybody's driving. Yeah, exactly.
It's
everybody's
good for the type A personalities. After all, those are the people who built civilization.
That's right. This is a good one. This isn't outrageous or crazy. This makes total sense to me because if I'm doing 75 on I-10 at 1 in the afternoon on a Saturday, there's no one else out there with me, then, I don't think I'm infringing upon anyone. I don't think that I'm endangering anyone.
Well, you technically get to it. We don't have specific speed limits in law. Ultimately, it says you can't go a speed not reasonable and prudent. You could go to court and argue that at 1 o'clock in the afternoon when there's nobody around, going 75 is reasonable and prudent. I don't know if you'd win in court, but you could.
No, you don't. I tried. Oh. I tried to argue every one of these dang things, and I'm awful. I'll never be an attorney.
You need a better lawyer than yourself.
he who has a list.
We know the rest of that.
Yes, we do. Yes.
Another interesting one is this striker that's going to allow restaurants to prohibit service animals. That could be a big deal, especially with the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do you know why? That's a Bob Thorpe bill. It just emerged this week. It seems sort of... I don't know. I don't understand it. Why is he doing this?
I don't get it either. It's not like anybody's getting sick from these dogs being in a restaurant. I don't get it.
John Gilliland and Lori Roberts, thank you so much for being with us. Man, that hour just flew by. On behalf of Doc O'Neill and myself, thanks for being with us right here in the Think Tank.